Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Church Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is November 22, 2016, or it is 60-23-2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, I Know Who Holds Tomorrow. I don't know about tomorrow, I just live from day to day. I don't borrow from the sunshine, for the skies may turn to gray. I don't worry o'er the future, for I know what Yahshua said, and today I'll walk beside Him, for He knows what is ahead. Many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. Every step is getting brighter as the road the stairs are climbed. Every burden's getting lighter, every cloud is silver light, and the sun is always shining. There no tear will dim the heart. At the ending of the rainbow, where the mountains touch the sky, many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. I don't know about tomorrow, it may bring me poverty, but the one who feeds the sparrow is the one who stands by me. And the path that be my portion, maybe through the flame of flood, and His presence goes before me, and I'm covered with His blood. Many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. Now it's time for the 12th hour, part 8. We're going to continue on with our study. Let's do a review from our last study. We're on page 42 of Behold, I Make All Things New. This track number 9 by V.T. Harlow. And it says, the days in which the kingdom is set up, and the days of these kings not after, but in the days of the kings who are symbolized by the feet and toes of the great image, shall the Elohim of heaven, says Daniel, calling attention unto the kingdom at its beginning, set up the kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it, the kingdom, shall break in pieces, consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:44. Thus we see that while the nations of our age, symbolized by the feet and toes of the great image of Daniel 2:41-42, are yet in existence, Yahweh will set up the kingdom with which he will overthrow them. Then it shall be said, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Savior, of our Yahweh Elohim, and of his Son Yahshua the Messiah, and he shall reign forever and ever. Revelation 11:15. Okay, it says that pronouncing the doom of the ancient Israel, the prophet Hosea inscribed the solemn writ. The children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, without a prince, without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without teraphim. Hosea 3:4. At the same time, however, a promise was made that afterwards, after the many days, shall the children of Israel return and seek the Yahshua their Yahweh their Elohim, and no, Yahshua their Savior, the Son, and David their King, and shall fear the Yahshua and his goodness in the latter days. Fear him and his goodness. His goodness is his governmental body that he has, the 144,000, the prophets, priests, and kings. That's the first fruits that is harvested unto him. And actually, Yahshua is the one that comes and harvests them. Believe it or not, he's the harvester. It's Elijah's message that harvests them, but Yahshua is the harvester of the 144,000. How the Adventist church. So it says, and shall fear the Yahshua and his goodness in the latter days, Hosea 3:5. As ancient David is in his grave, the king here promised must be an antitypical David. Just as the Elijah of Malachi 4:5 must be an antitypical Elijah. So here you have an antitypical David and an antitypical Elijah, and lo and behold, they're one and the same. Otherwise, in order to fulfill the prophecies, ancient David must necessarily rise from his grave and ancient Elijah descend from heaven. Daniel's declaration, page 42, that with this antitypical kingdom, the Yahshua will break the nations. And Jeremiah's declaration in the ensuing paragraph that it is his battle axe clearly show the kingdom's retributory work. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, says the Yahweh, unto Israel of today. Those who are to compose the infant kingdom, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy a kingdom, and with thee also will I break in pieces man and woman, and with thee will I break in pieces old and young, and with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock, and with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen, and with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. Jeremiah 51:20-23. This scripture cannot be applied to the Israel of Jeremiah's day, for she was then losing out rather than conquering, and from that day to this she has had no kingdom of her own. It is obviously, therefore, the Israel of these last days, the kingdom, through whose instrumentality Elohim will bring this world to an end. This soon coming kingdom, being not like an earthly kingdom, but like a heavenly one, its confines shall be a place of perfect peace and absolute safety. Characterizing both the king and the kingdom to be established after the many days, the prophet Isaiah declared, with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. Now, he's going to judge the poor with righteousness, but he's going to reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. So that's what's getting ready to be done right now. Is this the kingdom coming forward? The rod is the message. It's a message. It's like a lightning rod. It's a destroying instrument. Because the rod represents Yahweh's word, and it's a judicial aspect in that he used his word to execute judgment and justice upon the world, upon the wicked. And so I know the power of his word. I know the power of his word. I've used it, and I had this man come in here and he called himself Elijah. He was here 7 years. And he brought me a book. And he says, I need to read that book, he said. It's called Pulling Down of Strongholds. And Elijah thought that he was sent here to pull this kingdom down that I represented. So he gave me that book. He said, you need to read this book. He said, you've got a stronghold here, but it can be pulled down. And he felt like he was sent here to pull this stronghold down. And so, but Yahweh raised up his kingdom to pull down strongholds. And that's who we represent today. Okay, so he says, and righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. What does it mean, faithfulness, the girdle of his reins? It means that when he makes a promise and he puts it in writing, he says, my covenant will I not break, nor alter the things that's going out of my lips, he says in Psalms 89:34. So he says, when I go forth executing judgment and justice in the world, he says, you can depend on my government, my word that I have laid down to be fulfilled completely right to the letter. And if I said this is what's going to be done to this kingdom for its wickedness, he said, then it will come to pass at the appointed time. And I'll have a servant that I will raise up and give him a message to go warn that kingdom, just like I gave Jonah a message and told him to go warn Nineveh. He said, I'll do the same thing with whenever. And so, therefore, that's what we represent. His servant that he uses to execute his word. And that's what happened at Kermit, Texas. I executed the word, and it came to a head. And I stood up and I said to the prophet, I said, these are Yahweh's words. He put them here for this very reason of what's going on right now. And I said, and he will honor his word. And what I just read to you here in Matthew 18 says, these are Yahweh's words. And he will honor these words, his word. And sure enough, he did. That's all I had to say. The power of his word. Yahweh did the rest of it. But I had to deliver the message. Okay? So he says, the girdle of his reins. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid. Now, isn't this amazing? This earth one day is going to vanish away. It's already waxing old, our garment. It's going to vanish away one day. But before it does, he's going to restore it back to a Garden of Eden-like atmosphere here in these last days. He's going to show the wicked in the world. He's going to do this right before their eyes. He's going to show them that whenever he says, I'm going to restore this earth, I'm going to show the wicked that I can restore it while they are in the greatest conflict in their life to fight against stopping this restoration. I'm going to restore this earth and the kingdom right here in the midst of the time of trouble like there never was since there was a nation. It's going to be called the Kingdom of Peace. Okay? And he says he's going to make a covenant with the animals. And he said, this is right here before probation closes. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb. And the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little sow shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and the sucking sow shall play on the hole of the ass, and the weaned sow shall put his hand on the cockatrice den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. Isaiah 11:49. This prophesied era of absolute righteousness, peace, and knowledge of Elohim and the kingdom under the reign of the rod, (David), okay, and of the branch Yahshua must begin. Okay. So before the close of probation. This must begin before the close of probation. And then it goes right on into the millennium. After the close of probation. This kingdom never ceases. It's just the close of probation for the wicked and the world. The scriptures show that the kingdom is set before rather than at the beginning of the millennium. For in that day and the day that the kingdom is set up and peace reigns, a root of Jesse the rod, and the branch shall stand for an ensign of the people, (of the kingdom). Says Isaiah, and to it shall the Gentiles seek, (Isaiah 11:10). And as after the close of probation, the doors of the kingdom will be shut to all. The ensign must therefore be set up before probation closes, the only time that the Gentiles will have a chance to be converted to the Yahshua and unto his kingdom. A conclusion common unto the following scriptures. Also, O Judah, he has set an harvest for thee when I return the captivity of my people. (Hosea 6:11). So shall it come to pass that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountain, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Yahweh, and unto the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. (Isaiah 2:2-3). Surely the isle shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish, first to bring thy sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of the Yahweh thy Elohim, and unto the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favor have I had mercy on thee. Therefore thy gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the force of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the nation and kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish, yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. Okay, the glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together to beautify the place of my sanctuary. And I will make the place of my feet glorious. The sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet. And they shall call thee the city of the Yahweh, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. Whereas thou hast been forsaken and hated, so that no man went through thee, I will make thee an eternal excellency, a joy of many generations. (Isaiah 60:9-15). In the land where the kingdom stands, their sin exists not. Okay. It says, for lo, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, saith Yahweh. And I will cause them to return unto the land that I gave unto their fathers, and they shall possess it, for I will restore health unto thee, and I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith Yahweh, because they called thee an outcast, saying, This is Zion, whom no man seeketh after. Now, how does Yahweh, when it comes time to get something done, how does he move upon people to do these things at the appointed time? He puts his spirit in them. It's the spirit that impresses their mind, that stirs them up, and impresses their mind what to do next. And that's the way Yahweh's controlled all the events of the world from the time of the beginning. Because he put his spirit in people. And as it says right there in Proverbs 16:4, and I will read it to you. He said in Proverbs 16:4, he said, The Yahweh hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked, for the day of evil. So he put his spirit in the wicked, and he'll put his spirit in the righteous man. And that's how come the two comes in conflict with each other, is because Yahweh's spirit is controlling both sides. This is what we need to understand. We know Satan is there, and we know that he is there, and we know that he supports the wicked man. This is true. But Yahweh controls the wicked man just like he controls the righteous man. Okay? The wicked man makes his choice which spirit he wants. If he wants the evil spirit, that's his choice. Yahweh will still be in control of that evil spirit, just like he was with Pharaoh down in Egypt. Okay? So it says that, as I continue to read, Thus saith Yahweh, Behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents, and have mercy on his dwelling places. And the city shall be built upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. And out of them shall proceed thanksgiving, and the voice of them that make merry. And I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Jeremiah 30, verse 3, 17 and 19. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries, and will bring you to your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness. From all your idols will I cleanse you. And in your heart also will I give you a work which can be done only in probationary time. And a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh. And I will give you an heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Ezekiel 36:24-27. At this nearing time, when the Yahweh's people, who have been scattered, will be gathered from among the heathen, and brought into their own land, their hearts will be changed, and it will be said in effect, Whosoever is born of Yahweh doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin, because he is born of Yahweh. 1 John 3:9. Then shall the law of sin, now dominant in the natural heart, no longer exist. Thus, freed from sin's tyranny, the stony heart shall be replaced with a heart of flesh, with the law of Yahweh inscribed upon it forever. The very fact that Yahweh is now to restore the kingdom of Israel gives rise to the question as to whether he will not do so through the current effort of the Jews returning unto Jerusalem. In regard to the present activities in Old Jerusalem and of the returning of the Jews to their homeland as fulfilling the promises made to the descendants of Jacob, we must not lose sight of the fact that the promises are not to find their fulfillment in returning unto the promised land of either the Jews who denied and crucified their Savior or their descendants, who in nearly 2,000 years have failed to accept Him as their Savior, but rather in Yahweh's bringing there those Jews who are Jews not only by blood but also by faith. The promise, therefore, is unmistakably to the latter and to their descendants who compose the Christian church in its beginning and who are willing to die for rather than to deny their Savior. The promise is not, in other words, to the unconverted, represented first by Israel and second by Esau. Rather, it is their younger brethren, the converted Jews, represented first by Isaac and second by Jacob. It is therefore to those who have allowed the Yahweh to change their name from Jews, fleshly Israel, to, it says Christians here, and I don't like that word. I like the apostolic believers. And a typical apostolic believers today would be the spiritual Israel of today. Okay, just as Jacob, their forefathers, allowed Yahweh to change his name from Jacob to Israel. See, we don't have any record where the apostolic church name was changed by the Bible. The Bible don't change it to Christian. And the Hebrew language doesn't give any indication of that. The transliteration from the Hebrew would be apostolic believers in the blood of Yahshua. Thus, being by natural birth the seed of Jacob and by spiritual birth the seed of Yahshua, the truth they are both sons of Jacob and sons of Yahweh, and hence full-fledged Jews, Israelites indeed. Said, I know the blasphemy, said the angel, of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan, Revelation 2:9. Though the early apostolic congregation, being made up purely of the Jews, yet as they began to be called Christians, yeah, that was just an adopted custom that was created there. The new Jewish sect, was called Christian. In contradistinction to Jews, the old Jewish sect, they gradually lost their racial distinctiveness until finally they altogether ceased to be called Jews. Whereas throughout the centuries, the non-Christian Jews have preserved intact their racial identity. What is written, writes Paul, figuratively identifying these two lines, that Abraham had two sons, one by a bondmaid and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by the promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants. The one from Mount Sinai, which generates the bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, rejoice, thou barren, that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she which hath an husband. So Agar is considered the wife of Abraham that has the children, whereas Sarah is considered the barren wife that has no children. And Hagar represents a covenant that is opposed to the covenant Yahweh made with Abraham and Sarah. So you have two covenants here, represented by two races of people, the Jews and the Arabs. Okay? So, there was a covenant made with the Arab people. but it was in opposition to the covenant made with Abraham and Isaac, which is the covenant of heaven. Okay? Now we brethren as Isaac was are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Chast up the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. Galatians 4:22-31. So Paul was telling these here Gentile Galatians, that you're not children of that bondwoman. The Ishmaelites, the Arabs, you're not children, you're not descendants of them. You're descendants of the free woman, Sarah, which represents the house of Israel. Accordingly, since the 144,000 manifested cannot be made up of the Jews unconverted to Yeshua, we see that we must dig deeper in the identifying of the 144,000. According to what I just read, the Arab people cannot be classified as Gentiles. And the Jewish people cannot be classified as Gentiles. So therefore you have a third class of people, the Gentiles, which has to be classified either with the Arabs or with the Jews. But wherever they lean to, if the Gentile comes and accepts the Jewish religion, then they're grafted into that tree, according to Romans 11. They're grafted into the tree of Israel. If they go join the other side, then they're grafted in to the tree of the Arabs. But there can only be two classes of people, and that's the righteous and the wicked. And the Jews are in charge of the righteous, and the Arabs are in charge of the wicked. That was your two covenants that Yahweh had there at Sinai. that Moses was in charge of. Accordingly, since the 144,000 manifested cannot be made up of the Jews unconverted to Yeshua, we see that we must dig deeper in identifying the 144,000. Number one, they are the first fruits, Revelation 14:4. Number two, they are sealed in a time of peace while the four angels are holding the four winds, Revelation 7:1-3. Number three, they are not defiled with women, Revelation 14:4. They have their mouth, and number four, they have in their mouth no gall, Revelation 14:5. Number five, they stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion and follow him whithersoever he goeth. Revelation 14:1-4. They have the number six, they have the Father's name written in their foreheads. Revelation 14:1. Number seven, following their seating, a great multitude of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, says the Revelator, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with the white robes and palms in their hands. Revelation 7:1-9. In the light of these seven facts, the identity and the mission of the 144,000 become certain. The mere fact in itself that they are the first fruits does not give us the right to conclude that they were sealed during the earliest part of the human history. Indeed, their being Israelites, descendants of Jacob, positively precludes their having been sealed in the time of either Adam to Noah or of Noah to Jacob, before Israel was born. Neither could they have been sealed during the 3.5 years of Yeshua's personal ministry on earth. If that suggests anything itself as a possible time for Yeshua himself and all his followers at that time were persecuted and many of them were put to death, whereas during the sealing of the 144,000, the four winds figurative of all the nations scattered to the four corners of the earth are not permitted to blow, in other words, to hurt anything, Revelation 7:1. And as during the sealing period, the nations are restrained from obstructing the sealing of the righteous and the four angels, Revelation 7:2, are commanded not to hurt the wicked. We see that the 144,000 are sealed in a time of peace, not though in a time of peace among the nations themselves, but rather in a time during which neither the nations are permitted to persecute the church, those who are being sealed, nor the angels permitted to hurt the wicked. This condition, however, being contrary to that which existed in the days of the apostles, when both the Romans and the Jews persecuted the Christians, and when Elohim took the life of Ananias and Sapphira and brought destruction upon the Jerusalem, no one. Consequently, it's an honest to conclude that the 144,000 were sealed at that time. So this indicates to me then that Donald Trump coming on the scene and subduing our government, our wicked government, and once again returning and restoring back to our original roots and heritage of the Constitution and freedom of religion, and going to restore all of the ordinances of the Constitution, all of the Bill of Rights, all of the amendments are going to all be restored. So therefore, then the church is going to have a time of peace. Then this is when this kingdom of peace will be set up during this reign of Donald Trump. And when he takes office January 20th, that's when the nations are going to be rising to be at each other's throats, and the worldwide conflict is going to be on the rise. At the same time that Donald Trump is restoring the Constitution and bringing freedom once again back to the freedom of religion, freedom of this, and freedom of everything, to move about freely once again. Whereas that was being slowly taken away from us under the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration. The last 25 years, the Constitution has been eroded so bad that they just about accomplished their mission. And so if they were going to put Hillary Clinton in here in 2017 to succeed Obama and to continue on their charade of dismantling the Constitution and our government that we were founded upon, they were going to bring a time of trouble like there never was on president. But Yahweh checked that with Donald Trump's presidency. He checked it for a season. So now Donald Trump has 4 years that this will give this kingdom a peace, a window of 4 years now to set up this everlasting kingdom of heaven here, starting with the headquarters right here in Liberty Hill, Texas. I see it all too clear now of where we're at in the stream of time. Okay, let's continue. And as during the sealing period the nations are restrained from obstructing the sealing of the righteous, and the four angels, Revelation 7:2, are commanded not to hurt the wicked. We see that 144,000 are sealed in a time of peace, not though in a time of peace among the nations themselves, but rather in a time during which neither the nations are permitted to persecute the church, those who are being sealed, nor the angels permitted to hurt the wicked. This condition, however, being contrary to that which existed in the days of the apostles, when both the Romans and the Jews persecuted the Christians, and when Elohim took the life of Ananias and Sapphira and brought destruction upon Jerusalem, no one consequently can honestly conclude that 144,000 were sealed at that time. Neither could they be, as some think, those who arose from their graves when Yahshua yielded up the ghost, Matthew 27:50, 52, and 53. For besides the reasons already given, the angel came from the east, not to call them from their graves, but to seal them in their foreheads, Revelation 7:3 and 4. For the revelator, moreover, was told that the things about which he was to write were to be hereafter, Revelation 4:1, after 96 A.D., when he had the vision, and furthermore, the sealing of 144,000 takes place in the period of the sixth seal. Okay, now this is interesting. In the period of the sixth seal, just prior to the opening of the seventh seal. Revelation 6, 12, 17, 7, 1, 17, 8, chapter 8, verse 1. That's Revelation. Chapter 8, verse 1 is the opening of the seventh seal. Shortly before the end of all things. So we may have to take another long, hard look at about this closing of the sixth seal and the opening of the seventh seal. As I talked, took place at the Passover 2002. And which I still believe it did. But we're going to have more information explained why such a long period between the opening of the seventh seal and the actual bringing forth the 144,000. We're going to have to find a time gap there from 2002, Passover, to where we're at now in 2017. That's 15 years. And still we are looking for the 144,000. And still further, instead of being called firstborn, they are called firstfruits. A designation which shows that they are of the firstfruits of the harvest. As all the books of the Bible made an end in the Revelation, the sealing of the 144,000 must as a result find its complement in the writings of the prophets. And as nowhere but in Ezekiel 9 is found an event analogous to that of Revelation 7, it follows that the marking and sealing are identical, both of which are to separate the wicked from the righteous. The angels in the former smiting all who have not the mark, the angels in the latter hurting all who have not the seal. See Ezekiel 9, 4-6. Revelation 7, 2, 3, 9, chapter 9, verse 15. The fact, therefore, that at no time in church history, save in Noah's day, has Elohim destroyed all the wicked and preserved only the righteous, is conclusive evidence in the proof that the marking or sealing of the 144,000 is yet incomplete. Plainly then, among Elohim's people, those who fail to receive the seal are in the figure of the parable represented by the tares and are appointed unto destruction, whereas those who receive the seal and who escape the destruction are symbolized by the wheat and are destined for the barn, the kingdom. Matthew 13:30. As the tares and the wheat are to go together until the harvest, and as the harvest is the end of the world, Matthew 13:30-39. Obviously, the 144,000 are called the first fruit because they are the class of saints, wheat, first to be separated from the tares. They are, moreover, a class not defiled with women. According to Revelation 7, the 144,000 are of the 12 tribes, Israel and Judah, not of the Gentiles. Also, both the marking and the slaughtering, according to Ezekiel 9, are to take place in both Israel and Judah, the church where the harvest judgment commences. And if the judgment asks the apostle, first begin thus, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. In the cumulative light focusing to this point, the 144,000, the first fruits, stand forth clearly as Christian Jews who are found in the church at the commencement of the harvest. In this respect, they are not defiled with women. They have, in other words, from their birth, been Elohim's people, Jews, not defiled with heathen worship. They follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth, with the result that when he stands on the Mount Zion, they too stand there. And further, the fact that these are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins, and that they are the servants of our Elohim, clearly imply that they are together classed defiled with women, a second fruit. This class of saints must be those who have at one time been married to some unchristian mistress, a heathen church, and who consequently are not descendants of either Jacob or the Christian church. So there are to be two harvests, one from the church and one from the world. The record of the former mentions only Israelites, 144,000, those not defiled with women. So it does not say that there may not be others, while the record of the letter, however, definitely embraces a great multitude from all nations, which must necessarily be both of undefiled and defiled ones, Jews and Gentiles. Thus, as after the sea of 144,000, the first fruit, come the great multitude from all nations. The latter can logically only be called the second fruit. Otherwise, 144,000 cannot be called the first fruit, for where there is no second, there can be no first. And the first fruits, the 144,000, being living saints, so also therefore are the second fruits, the great multitude. The first fruits, moreover, being analogous to the firstborn, the priests are therefore the ministers, the servants of Yahweh, those who are to bring in the second fruit. Prophesying of the separation of the one and of the ingathering of the other, Isaiah declares, "For by fire and by his sword will the Yahweh plead with all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations of Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, and to Tubal and Avan, to the isles afar off that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory. They shall declare my glory among the Gentiles, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations upon horses, and in chariots, and in litters, and upon mules, and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith Yahweh. As the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel into the house of Yahweh." Isaiah 66:16, 19, and 20. Note that those who escape the slaughter of the Yahweh are sent to proclaim his fame and to show forth his glory among the Gentiles. "Thou shall bring all their brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations. They shall, in other words, preach this gospel of the kingdom and all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." Matthew 24:14. This great work, which no others have ever been able to accomplish, these escaped ones will be, because in their mouth is found no God. The fact that the 144,000 are without God in their mouth shows that as servants of Yahweh, they have a message to proclaim, that they are to be found blameless in their proclaiming of it. Speaking the truth and nothing but the truth, they shall prosper wherever they go with the message, although they are sent with it when the winds are loosed and blowing. The angels holding back the winds at the four corners of the earth denotes that they are holding back some worldwide trouble, which should it break out while the church is in her latest end condition, would block the ceiling. And from this fact, it follows that immediately after the 144,000 are sealed, the trouble will begin, signalizing the angels loosing the winds. With this trouble such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1. The great multitude is to be brought face to face while being called out of Babylon, Revelation 18:4, into the kingdom. This time of trouble is foreshadowed by the present trouble, which the church is bringing upon the first fruits, those who are being sealed, marked in her midst, to be removed to the kingdom, the barn, Matthew 13:30, the vessels, of Matthew 13:48. Consequently, as the making of the image of the beast, Revelation 13:11-18, is in the prophecy, the only worldwide event of this kind, and as the great multitude with palms in their hands come out of great tribulation, the only logical conclusion is that after the 144,000 are sealed, and while the winds are blowing, the second fruits will be gathered and the work of the gospel closed. The trouble will burst forth as the two-horned beast decrees that no man might buy or sell, save he that has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Thus will the dragon be wroth with the woman, and make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Yahweh, and have the testimony of Yeshua Messiah, Revelation 12:17. And at the same time, the angels will be allowed to hurt all who trouble the church of Yahweh, and who attempt to join it in the same way as the terrorists now do, and thus hurting the wicked. The angels execute the wrath of the Lamb. In view of this, the Yahweh asks, who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:17. It is the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, Malachi 4:5. And the sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites. Hence the question, who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us shall dwell with the everlasting burning? Only those who see themselves in need of everything, and these are the ones who see the King, he that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppression, that shaketh his hand from holding of bribes, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from seeing evil. He shall dwell on high. His place of defense shall be the munition of rocks. Bread shall be given him. His water shall be sure. Okay. Thine eyes shall see the King in his beauty. They shall behold the Lamb that is very far off. Thine heart shall meditate terror. Where is the scribe? Where is the receiver? Where is he that counted the towers? Thou shalt not see a fierce people, a people of a deeper speech than thou canst perceive, of a stammering tongue that thou canst not understand. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tabernacle that shall not be taken down. Not one of the stakes thereof shall ever be removed. Neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. But there the glorious Yahweh will be unto us a place of broad rivers and streams, wherein shall go no galley with oars, neither shall a gallant ship pass thereby. For the Yahweh is our judge, the Yahweh is our lawgiver, the Yahshua is our King. He will save us. Isaiah 33:14-22. Michael, the great prince, shall then stand up and deliver everyone that shall be found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. Because in that day the Yahweh is both to shepherd the faithful and to punish the unfaithful, the message which announces this great and dreadful day, Malachi 4:5, is entitled the Shepherd's Rod. The Yahshua's voice therefore crieth unto the city, hear ye the rod and who hath appointed, Micah 6:9. Sunken in the later sin, slumber and sleep, the city, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the Elohim's merciful effort to prepare it against this day of trouble, is to be startled to life by his urgent cry. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Isaiah 52:1. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Yahweh shall rise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to the light, and change the brightness of thy rising. Isaiah 60:1-3. The church of the latter saints, being the last of the seven churches, is the last section of the Christian church in which the wheat and the tares are commingled. So, in this case, the Adventist end is called the last of the Christian churches. The overcomers, the marked ones from it, those who hear the rod, begin the eighth section of the church. So the Adventist church, the spiritual Israel of the day, represents the seventh section of the church. The one symbolized by the barn, that's number eight. Matthew 13:30. And the vessels, Matthew 13:48, also by the golden candlestick of Zechariah 4. Okay, of her the Yahshua says, for the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name which the mouth of to Yahshua's name. Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of Yahshua, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Elohim. Isaiah 62:2-3. Among the later saints, however, those who refuse to arouse and take in the situation, who will not sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church thereof, Ezekiel 9:4, will be left without the mark, and will consequently fall under the slaughter weapons of the angel of Ezekiel 9, while those who receive the mark will escape them and be shielded from the trouble, and their shield being symbolized by the barn and the vessels, Matthew 13:30-48. This sparing of the wheat on the one hand and slaying of the tares on the other hand among the first fruits, those in the church, foretoking the sparing of the good and the slaying of the bad among the second fruit. That was in Babylon, Revelation 18:4. Hence, the work in Laodicea typifies that in Babylon. Okay, well, the work in Laodicea in the Seventh-day Adventist Church typifies that in Babylon. While the Yahshua, the Son, is now marking the first fruits of his kingdom, those in Laodicea, the ancient men, Testimony Volume 5, page 211, supposing themselves to be doing his bidding by forcing the laity not to listen to the Yahshua's messengers and not to read his message in the shepherd's rod, are attempting to prevent them from receiving his mark, which is to keep them from perishing. And as prophecy shows, this war, when finished in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, spreads into Babylon as Yahshua begins his marking the second fruits of his kingdom. First fruits are in the Adventist Church. The second fruits, the Gentiles, are brethren to the Jews. They're found in Babylon. And as the beast supposing himself, as do the ancient men now, to be doing the Yahshua's bidding, decrees that all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, Revelation 13:16, receive his mark rather than the Yahshua, which is to keep them also from perishing. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive to hear this message and more. Let us now close with a song. Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet by the Elijah Davis. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for he walked on dusty roads and he and me. Often crossed the road, they were searching all along as he journeyed along the road to Calvary. Dusty roads and the feet, oh, the journey was complete, from the manger to the cross, to those golden streets, to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and the feet. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee. Well, there's nothing in this world better than him. Raise water into wine, just a tendency to wine, and this water he needs in the man of Galilee. Dusty roads for his companions, there's no places his abode, and no feet were often moving underneath the very low. Never complaining as he went along the way, on the way to that Calvary and the judgment day. Just be those and go feet, oh, would you like to meet that man named Joshua coming down your street? Jonah, who wanted to